talk about how cool that intro is? Every week I love it.
Every week. I look forward to Thursday nights for that intro.
Yes, it really is. Cynthia McDonald did a phenomenal job on it.
Phenomenal job. Welcome back, everybody. It is Thursday night, 6:30 tonight, Central Daylight Time. A little bit of a change there, difference there for you. But it's another episode of In Black and White on YFNA News. I am your host, Rick Lockhart.
I did that on purpose that time.
Because he said he had it.
And I'm your co-host, Ethan Michael.
As he refers to himself as the resident white boy.
I should have waited as long as possible with a dead straight face just to see what you would have done.
You already said you had it. I put my head down for everyone else who's like, well, what's going on? Because I'm sure that's what they said. Hey, we got a great show for you tonight. A lot of things that we want to dive into. I promise you all keep us busy with conversations. As long as racism exists in black and white, we'll be here hopefully for other conversations down the line. But I want to make sure that we cover everything tonight. So before we get started, a couple of things I want to highlight. First and foremost, I really want to say to a group of you, quite a few of you who are watchers and listeners who participate sometimes in the discussion or don't. This week, I've gotten a lot of calls from and texts and messages, direct messages from people who've been really encouraging of the conversations that we have, for the posts that I've done and the engagement with people who are just willfully ignorant and banging my head up against a wall. Your calls, your texts, your direct messages, they mean a lot. They're very encouraging, especially those of you who are trying to find ways to raise awareness within your own community, specifically for those of you who are looking for better ways to change your perspective. Thank you so much for that. But you all keep doing that work because we have to continue to focus on being anti-racist. It's just not enough being non-racist anymore. We see the protests. We see people talking. People are out there trying to make a difference and make a change, whether it be in our legislation or just in our communities. I promise you it's working, and it's going to take the chiseling away at each person as little as it may be. Those little occurrences mean a lot. So continue to change your perspective. Continue to fight for anti-racism. And I also want to thank my good buddy Ethan there, who produces YFNA News and this show, for all of the work and the platform that you've created. Thank you very, very much for what you're doing, Ethan Michael. Thank you.
Let's be clear. This wouldn't be possible without you, dude. So
that's fine. You know, this week has been an overwhelming week, you all, and Lady Caprice, what's going on? It's been an overwhelming week for me, with the conversations that have been taking place, the comments, and just the people who refuse to see a different perspective, understand what's going on in our country, realize that systemic racism is a thing. And when we get that systemic racism isn't a thing from our leadership, from our administration, and passed on down, that fuels the fire for these conversations to almost go nowhere. Some of them do produce a change, but not all of them do. And this week has just been that rough one. So we're going to wing the show tonight and have a great conversation around a few things that have come up. Ethan, I think Richard Graves there. I think it's important to note that first. Well, before we do that, let's remember to log on to this YouTube channel. Hit the like button, click on the subscribe, and that little alarm button so that you can get alerts for all of the shows. I was waiting for you to give me that. All the shows that are on the YFNA News Network, specifically also our sister show / brother show / other show.
Maybe we should just call it Sibling Show.
Sibling Show. The 13% that airs every Monday night here on YFNA News at 7 o'clock or 7:30 p.m.? 7:30. But the 13%. Richard Graves.
I have so many shows at different like half hour time slots.
He's definitely gonna correct us. But hosted by Cynthia McDonald and Richard Graves, part of the YFNA News family. Love what you all are doing over there. You all make sure that you tune in and take a look. Whew. So and the thumbs up. Yes. The like. I got the like. I highlighted the like. You all. So we got a lot to cover tonight, and before we wrap up tonight, you all that are watching, thank you for tuning in. I got some things I need to get off my chest, so we'll take care of that and cover that once we get there. But we have a special guest with us this evening too as well, Ethan.
And I am excited about this special guest. This was the first guest, so I've been nervous before, but this was the first guest on another show to actually make me start sweating bullets. It was I've never felt like that before, but it was awesome.
Hey, but I'm grateful to have her. Hey, but before we bring her on, a couple of things I need to highlight. So first, for those of you who don't know, Juneteenth is tomorrow. Juneteenth is tomorrow. For those of you that don't know, I don't know how you don't know, but the president of our country didn't know what Juneteenth was. So how could I expect you to know? Juneteenth is a celebration of the emancipation of slaves from in Texas 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was delivered and slaves were freed in the rest of our country. So Texas unfortunately held on to their slaves for two additional years, and on June 19th, their emancipation was granted. So I really encourage you to celebrate Juneteenth on tomorrow. Find something going on in your local community. I really want to encourage you to support Black businesses, Black-owned businesses. As we talk about systemic racism, it's prevalent in the communities that are predominantly white or the neighborhoods and schools that are predominantly white, that systemic racism still exists. This is a time where we're all speaking out for you to get out there and support Black businesses. In fact, I'm wearing the shirt. You see Dope Vibes here. This is by Recycled Modern, and they have an event actually coming up. Recycled Modern and Mia Ann Photography has their Juneteenth sidewalk sale. They're actually located at 1152 West Diversity Parkway in Chicago. You can also find them online. But on Friday, tomorrow, 3 to 7 p.m., you can come to your favorite shop and experience a new normal. Black is Dope, the sidewalk sale, which is featuring local artisans whose voices are the threads that weave the fabric of the Black community. Their makers and artisans include photography, art, home decor, vintage fashion, and much, much more. And just so you know, Black is Dope is an homage to Blackness curated by Recycled Modern and a part of the Dope Vibe series. They have artists like Nia Ann Photography, Martha Wade, Paul Branton, Reform School, Hyde Park and Company, and many, many more. This is a great way to get out and show your support for Black businesses. Find Black businesses and support them. I promise you, your money is valued in every community, but it's definitely valued in the Black community. We talk about the Black community being able to strap up their boots and pull themselves up. Well, here's a way that you can help contribute to that. In fact, my therapist, thank God for my therapist, Ethan, because this week has been, whew, let me tell you.
I can tell, man. I feel I'm not used to this, Rick. I'm used to the happy, bubbly one.
I know we have a limited amount of the swear words that we can use, and I'm going to try to hold on to them for the next show. But I had a therapy session this morning, and with all the posting and social media engagement that I've been doing, it was strongly recommended, and my therapist gave me some work to kind of refrain from that next week, so you might not see much from me next week. But TMH Behavioral Services, Black-owned therapy group that caters to any and everyone, but it's a Black-owned therapy group that I was able to find and has really been working wonders. So again, this is your time to get out and support Black businesses. If you have Black businesses that you want to be supported, that you know about, please tag them in the comments so people can see the Black businesses that are out there. Let's support the Black community in all the ways that we can.
There is one in the comments that I'd like to point out right now. Abstract Media.
Yes, Abstract Media.
I feel bad. I don't want to pronounce her name wrong.
That's Omari La Negra.
Okay. So
you got to say it with the Spanish.
If you like the thumbnails on my YouTube and YFNA News, she has done the majority of them, and she is friggin' awesome. And she deals with me messaging her like 84 times and going with changes and changes and changes. And she does a really great job. And she is one of those graphic artists that has an imagination. So let me give an example. I don't always know what I want. So to me, I don't want to go to a graphic artist and be like, okay, I need it exactly like this, with this color, with this shape. I don't have that imagination. And I don't like when a graphic artist is actually like, well, I need to know exactly how you want everything. I'm not a designer. She is. And she literally, you just tell her like, hey, this is what I'm looking for. Like, this is the theme of the show. And every time it has been spot on with the theme I was looking for. So seriously, phenomenal graphic artist.
She really is. And great to work with.
Yes.
Love Omari. You can say Omari if in the event you are Americanized. It's okay. But Omari, if you know how to say the names in the Spanish accent or dialect. She's going to get me for that later. My middle name is Ricardo. You know, it's a thing. I gotta make sure I keep into my Spanish roots. Did I see the South Loop, Chicago South Loop Hotel? Did I just see that from Tom?
Yeah.
Chicago South Loop Hotel, a great, absolutely, another Black-owned business. If in the event there's some place that you just want to get out and stay. If they're open, I'm not sure if they're open during the COVID season, which let me remind you that if you do happen to go to the sidewalk sale for Recycle Modern tomorrow, please make sure that you do bring a mask. It is required. COVID-19 is still real. It's still out there.
It's not a hoax. It's really not.
And some of us thought it was on halftime while racism was performing the halftime show, but COVID is back. So we're now in the third and fourth quarter of the game. So Ethan, do you think we should go ahead and bring our guest on?
I think so. And without further ado, let me, if you don't mind, I'd like to say that name, the name.
Please.
Marie De La Font.
There it is.
I love saying it like that.
It's De La Font. Maria, Marie, did you hear him correct me like five times in our show last week?
For my last name?
Yeah, he was like,
You know I made it up and there's no correct way to say it, right?
I was doing that. I was like, I'm going to mess with it. So I kept saying, no, De La Font. And he's like, De La Font? I'm like, no, De La, and I just kept repeating it the same way.
Way to mansplain it. Yeah.
And here's the thing. I actually thought I was pronouncing it wrong. I'm like, I'm saying it just like you. What are you talking about?
That's called gaslighting.
That's what it's called. And we get enough gaslighting from our current administration, Ethan. Don't run my blood pressure up. So tonight, we got a lot to cover. And as you see down at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah. But real quick, Marie, where can everyone find you?
Yeah.
We should let her do an
introduction. My apologies.
Sure. Yeah. Rick's like, sure, why not? mostly the big stuff I'm doing is hosting a podcast called Everyone's Autonomous, and it's for people who have left religion and need a place to deconstruct that and figure out how to become human again and how to wake up to the injustices that are going on that maybe we were blind to before. And then so that's called Everyone's Autonomous. And then the other big thing I do is life coaching work. Some of it is focused on people who are interested in ethical non-monogamy. So you can find that information at mariedelafont.com. And then lastly, I just wanted to say that Rick and Ethan, while you were talking about supporting Black businesses, I had a little epiphany. And I don't know if it'll work, but I was just thinking about giving free commercial time to Black businesses on my podcast.
Yes, absolutely, that would work. So
right?
There you go.
Why didn't we think of that? That's such a good idea.
I just thought of it.
That's why.
Yeah, well, free advertisement. And it wouldn't be like brick and mortar because everyone's across the country, but like, you know, online, like the graphic design artist Omari, and I can't say Omari because I speak Spanish, but you know, I can promote Omari if she wants to have, if I assume she wants to have a commercial on the show, we can promote that. You know, that seems like a really cool way to do it.
Well, and at the end of the day, I think that's it takes that, right? Where it definitely takes where there is an opportunity to support Black businesses. Not everybody may be able to afford, especially during this COVID season, but there's something that you can do to ensure the promotion of Black businesses. And that's one right there. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Email me if you are a Black business owner and you would like to promote yourself on my show. I have maybe about 500 listeners. Email me at everyonesautonomous@gmail.com and you have free commercial space.
And you can check out in the description, you'll see the links to Marie's Twitter and her website and podcast.
I'm excited to have you on, Marie. Thank you so much for joining us and spending time with us to ration through these things that we have to talk about today. Marie, let me ask you, so you're in Minneapolis, correct?
Yes, Minneapolis.
Can you remember if it's like a suburb of Minneapolis or not?
So I'm like, that's how we pronounce it. Yeah.
Minneapolis. So can you talk to us a little bit before we get into our conversation about the climate that's going on there in the past recent week or so?
Well, I'm assuming you're not talking about the literal climate because right now it's raining.
It's dark there. It's raining. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
well,
a good summertime storm. So that could be relaxing. Thanks for joining us through this.
Yeah, I mean, I've been at protests on and off for the last 3 weeks. Being self-employed and being a photographer has lent me the ability to be able to do that. And it's active. It is very active here in Minnesota. A lot of protests are going, a lot of demonstrations, a lot of movements, a lot of attention. People, from what I can see, are waking up to the more systemic issue of racism, not just like, hey, if your friend does something racist, you know, tell them off. They're like, oh shit, it was more than that. And so I'm seeing a lot of people being activated, asking more, getting involved more, showing up more, digging in, like even within my segregated community, which is mostly white people. And I realized just, you know, recently that we can call that segregated, that we are segregated. Even within my white community, even my friends are digging in like I've never seen them dig in before. And so it's exciting and terrible and all of the things. And we're all fighting very hard. The Native Lives Matter group knocked over our Columbus statue a week ago, and it was glorious. It was wonderful.
Oh, no. Listen, save that for the Aunt Jemima conversation, because that's going to go yes. along with that. But no, it's fine.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so it's complicated here, just like it is everywhere else, I think. But
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you've been able to participate as well, and that you're seeing a lot of that take place. I think I just saw in the news today, and Ethan, you're familiar with Wheaton, the Wheaton area, the Wheaton suburb, one of the western suburbs here in Chicago.
It's a very, very Christian, conservative,
white community and neighborhood.
It's even, I believe it's still a dry town. Like they don't allow,
I don't think they have they don't have the sale of alcohol, or they just recently introduced it. One of the two, but the Wheaton College does that, or Wheaton University, I think it's Wheaton College, does not allow for alcohol beverages on campus. They are a dry campus, but there is a group of mothers who got together to make signs for Black Lives Matter with all of the Black people who have lost their lives to racism and racial injustice, and even at the hands of police officers. And there's just this group of like white four mothers. And I thought to myself, it's going to take that. And when they were interviewed, they were like, we're ready for the backlash. We're ready for it. Like, yes, white women, speak up and speak out.
So we're going to turn our care and anger
and please. Take that,
you know,
take that
like care use the care and anger, but for the right
for
team.
Black lives. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love it. So shall we get into our, go ahead.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, we should get into the news stories.
Let's get into the news stories. So the first news story that we have for you this evening comes from an officer who had a bit of a breakdown from and let's take a listen.
Sorry, one second.
We go. Come to the McDonald's at Love's on the 4th Avenue exit, and I waited in line to get my food. I had already done my mobile order so that, you know, people don't pay for my stuff, because I just always like to pay for it myself. But I'm on my way home from work. When I pull up to the window, they hand me my receipt, so I go to the second window to get my food, and I'm waiting. And I'm waiting. And so the girl comes to the window and asks me what my order was. I repeat my order and my coffee order. And they ask me to pull up because my food's not ready. It's an English muffin meal with a hash brown and coffee. And I mean, I hadn't eaten since I've been up for a very long time, but I haven't eaten in a while, so I was kind of hungry. And I'm still waiting, and they asked me to pull up. So I pull up forward, and a girl comes out with my coffee, and just coffee, and she hands it to me, and I have my window down, and that's all she hands me is the coffee. So I told her, I said, don't bother with the food, because right now I'm too nervous to take it. It doesn't matter how many hours I've been up. It doesn't matter what I've done for anyone. Right now I'm too nervous to take a meal from McDonald's because I can't see it being made. I don't know what's going on with people nowadays, but please just give us a break. Please just give us a break. I don't know how much more I can take. I've been in this for 15 years, and I've never, ever had such anxiety about waiting for McDonald's drive-thru food. So just have a heart, and if you see an officer, just tell them thank you. Because I don't hear thank you enough anymore.
Okay. So the video has been tagged as Officer Karen. What do you guys think? What, Marie, let me start with you. What are your impressions of?
As a white woman, I mean, if I even zoomed out from race, I just don't even understand what her reaction is. It's really paranoid, like beyond paranoid. And like, I just don't understand what she thought was happening. Like that they registered that she was an officer. And so now they're making an extra special meal. And it just takes longer to cook because they had to add like meth to it. Like, what did she think was happening?
Yo, so as someone who's worked in restaurant hospitality for the better part of 20 years, I personally take offense when people imply that individuals are food preparers are doing something to food that is inappropriate. I personally take offense to that. I've always taken offense to that. This is no different, but I think that it goes without saying that because people have seen that before, they immediately think, this is actually in my own family. I have people who refuse to return food. And I'm always like, listen, let the restaurant get it right. They got it wrong. Let them fix it. Don't be scared to take it back. They're not going to do anything to it. They want your experience to be great. They want you to come back. Why would they kill you? So I don't know if Ethan knows his mic is muted. So I think that that is, of course, I think that that particular stance is offensive. However, let me say this. I understand. And I think, is her name Stacy? I really wanted, I don't want to call her Officer Karen because that's not right. I think her name was Stacy.
Because is she even an officer? Like, she didn't look like she was a cop.
From my understanding, yes.
She is an officer?
I believe she's an officer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, listen, I get it. I get it. It's police officers are the target of a lot right now. Here's my
Georgia police officer.
Oh, so she's in Georgia. Now I understand her anxiety. Let's get into that a little bit. So these police officers in Georgia, going along with that, I don't know if you all heard that there were quite a few police officers in Atlanta who called in sick this week after the decision came to charge the officers involved in the Rayshard Brooks murder. I say, personally, let them go. I'm not all for, and let me be clear, I'm not for the misconception of defunding the police means, you know, the people are just, again, what I've seen this week, well, let all the police go and let's see people fend for themselves. What? Mm. How does that make any sense? No. Nobody is saying get rid of the police, although that there are some people who, some groups that are looking to restructure, and that might determine getting rid of the current existing police system and environment and changing that up. No one, I'm not saying get rid of the police. I can't speak for everybody, but there's no point in getting rid of the police. We do need the police. We need them to serve and protect our communities. So if people want to call in sick, get rid of them. Get some people in there who are actually going to commit to serving and protecting the citizens of the community in which they're assigned to serve and protect. If you want to call in sick, what's the old phrase? A hit dog will holler. You mad? You and your feelings because this officer who actually did kill someone used excessive force that wasn't necessarily required for the situation, but wanted to hide behind he feared for his life, which is the current go-to for that silence code, that code of silence in amongst the blue line there. If they want to call out sick and they want to go, let them go. They never had intentions on protecting the community. We don't want them. We don't need them. Get some people in there who actually want to protect and serve the community.
It makes it easier. They all just raised their hands and said, we're the ones you're going to want to fire.
And that's literally what they did.
You.
As a manager, as somebody who's worked in management, that's exactly what I would. Oh, so that's what you want? Okay, cool. Well, listen, we no longer need your services. Thank you so much. Run that badge. Run that gun. Bam. Get out.
So I definitely don't want to undercut her anxiety or her being upset. I mean, she clearly is in distress. Whether it's justified or not is obviously a different story. I think it definitely speaks to the privilege in America if you're that concerned and upset over not getting your food in time. Like, there are people literally worried about not getting killed, and you're freaking out over a fucking cup of coffee. Like, I kind of find that a little asinine. And I think that just goes to show how often people don't realize how great their life is. Like, if that's your biggest concern, I don't know. What do you think?
Did we lose Rick?
We did lose Rick. Oh, he's okay. Back.
I was like, we really need him.
I don't know. Like, my screen went black. And
talking about racism.
You got real black, Rick. Is that funny?
And the screen is just still there. So you know what? I'm just gonna go with it's the support of the black movement.
Black square.
That's it. You just listen to my voice.
Solidarity.
That's what it is. I'll come back in just a second. I don't know. It just happened. You know, this wonderful technology in this live stream. And I kind of missed a bit. Ethan, I kind of want to piggyback, though. I don't want to undercut her anxiety. Her anxiety is anxiety, right? Working in restaurant management, I've 100% had these days where, you know, especially in some of the restaurant locations that I've worked in, what is my day going to entail? What is it going to look like? What am I going to have to deal with? In their current state, police officers are under attack. They really are. And listen, this is coming from a guy who was raised as under a police officer, the man who took on the role and the figure of a paternal parent, in a sense, was a police officer. So I understand their lives are important, right? But there's a culture within policing that needs to change. And there is, exactly, Samantha Brooke, there is the focus on, there's a microscope now on that culture. And if there's a microscope on that culture, you would think you should probably want to do right. I feel like, you know, I understand her anxiety, but maybe we should get some time off. Like, she needs a vacation.
Right.
15 years, she said that she had been doing this for 15 years. And it was like, I've never been this anxious over a McMuffin from McDonald's. Mind you, shouldn't even be eating McDonald's. Let me just put that out there. But I get it because I eat McDonald's some from time to time. Trying to watch my figure, Rick, but you got a lot of
weird not seeing you on camera right now. It's actually really weird.
I know. I'll fix that in a second.
Solidarity, Ethan.
I know. Go with it. Why don't you do the same for your camera? No.
Oh, great! Now Ethan, I'm the racist.
Ethan, there's still that little white circle there. So, how do you all feel about around the conversation when in regards to defunding the police? Like, what are your thoughts about it?
Do it. There are some really strong cases for it.
We should probably clarify what defunding the police is before, because some people will automatically think we're saying, like, get rid of the police or take away all money and resources from them. And that, at least from my understanding, is not the case.
Right.
How good are you at explaining defund the police? I feel like Rick was better at it than me.
Since Rick fell off, I guess. I don't want to explain things for him, but it sounds like the dialogue might be more effective if we talk about it descriptively, because when I first heard defund come up, I was like, oh, that seems like a lot. But I also was like that when I heard a lot of other things that people are yelling, like white privilege. I was like, what's that? So there's a reaction to be had, but if you lean in a little bit, defunding talks about, it's more like reallocating resources from the cops to other social support departments, different specialists that could be handling things that cops don't need to be handling. They're picking up everything. And so defunding sounds like reallocating those resources to other areas. And then besides that, there's
so an example
that was defunding.
From my understanding, an example would be, like, let's say someone is mentally ill. And when you call 911, rather than a police officer showing up who's not trained to deal with someone, they would send a mental health professional. Isn't that what they're trying to do with it? Is that my understanding that correctly or no?
Well, I actually think that.
Sorry.
I'm gonna put that out there.
We're all so hesitant on this topic.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I love that Mayor Lori Lightfoot here in Chicago. I tried this camera thing in and out. It's for whatever reason, it's not logging back in for me. It could be because it got mad, but it's fine. Systemic racism.
fuck you, StreamYard.
I'm telling you, like, it's just StreamYard got mad. I love what
and
she.
Do you know what's gonna happen, Rick? Later, two white people talk racism as black man gets booted out, and we're done. We're so done.
Let me put this out there: the white people did not boot me out. We're blaming StreamYard for this.
This is not going well, Rick.
And let me be clear: this is not a joking matter by any means. It really isn't. It's just sometimes you do have to find humor in certain things so that you can continue to talk about these difficult issues. So, I think Mayor Lori Lightfoot put out something very important when she said that, you know, that was one of the things that she wanted to do. It was they would be required to go through mental health screenings at specific times throughout, I think, the week or the month or so on and so forth. And I think in Atlanta, one of the things that they were looking to do was add social workers to their force. And I think that even it might be going federal. I believe the president mentioned having that as an option for the federal executive order that he was writing or signing or what have you. At the end of the day, what it's going to come down to is a culture change. And if in the event it means, I mean, I've seen posts that suggested maybe we should start paying for the lawsuits out of the tax dollars and maybe have the pensions pay for those lawsuits, right? So defunding, I think, is that definitely that. Where do we allocate resources for these things? Listen, Cynthia McDonald, let's write our congressman. Give me my congressman's name, and I'm writing my congressman about this camera issue here. It's totally racist.
And just to be clear, racism is not a joke. We're just trying to laugh off the situation and have fun with it because we really can't do anything about it right now.
We really can't. And my apologies for those of you that really want to see my face and understand the passion that I have and the things that we're talking about. But, you know, for this officer here, I really think that this is, first of all, I don't know what possessed her to put that on camera, but I understand that our social media, recording ourselves and so on and so forth, this is what kind of becomes a therapeutic type of platform for many of us. And I can imagine that in her high stressful job, that's really just all she wanted to do. She wanted to share her anguish with the situation. She also, she encouraged people to say thank you to police officers and show appreciation. Hey, to the police officers that are watching, thank you. We do appreciate the work that you do when it comes to serving and protecting our community. But I encourage you to continue to change and reform the culture of policing by speaking up and holding your officers accountable, holding those in leadership accountable to hold those officers accountable, and change the narrative. Change the narrative. It's got to change.
I agree.
So,
you know, it's I found myself on the receiving end of a block and delete. And, you know, I'm a quote libtard because, wait, is your camera coming back on?
No, it's not. That's all I'm able to do.
Okay. Well, good. At least we have that. That's good. Oh, okay.
Shout out to Al, who's not watching yet at the moment, but my wonderful fiance there. You all can look at our beautiful faces together.
Yes.
Aww.
That's fine.
Now I forgot where I was going.
They called you.
The block and delete. Yeah.
I was trying to explain like frustration with the police force and the this mentality that we in America are taught that no matter what, the split second a officer or person puts on a badge, they are automatically a hero. And I don't want to speak for either of you, but that is a dangerous mentality to have. That mentality has led us to the problems we're having today, that you can't critique them. They're heroes. No. The heroes are the ones that act. Just putting on a badge, while I respect you putting on that badge, while I respect you going out there, that doesn't make you a hero. And they were not happy with that. It was like every white Christian conservative just went at me. I don't even want to go into the names I was called, but.
Ooh, you were called names.
Yes.
I mean, doesn't that kind of reek of like, at least the Christianity that I came from, God could do no wrong. Anything good that happened was because God did it. Anything that was bad that happened was because the devil did it. There was no way you could hold God accountable for anything. And so we're holding these cops like they're gods.
Right. And like, we need to stop.
They can't do no wrong.
Well, so let's look at the different perspectives there too. When kids in white communities are taught about police officers, they're taught that they can trust them. They're taught to reach out to them. They're taught that those are the people who are going to protect you, right? That's realistically the upbringing in the white communities. Whereas in the black communities, it's a completely different narrative. You have to obey the cops. You have to make sure you don't threaten the cops. Make sure the cops feel comfortable around you so that they don't use the fact that they might have been, they felt threatened, that they end up shooting or killing you. The police officers aren't the people to run to when you're in trouble because they're only going to put you in jail. You're going to have to go to court and you don't have money for jail and bond, which is another systemic racial issue when we talk or look at the criminal justice system and the way that it's set up. People in urban communities, or excuse me, people in predominantly non-wealthy urban communities, excuse me, they don't have the resources to provide for those situations when that happens. So the two different narratives there, you know, I think I saw police officers as a hero because I was in white schools, in white elementary schools. But when I got home to the hood, that police officers weren't a hero. Police officers were the people you ran from. Police officers are the one that you don't get into it with. You don't give them a reason. And I still hold on to that narrative to this day. I don't want to give the police officer any reason to have to pull me over, to have to say anything to me other than an encouraging word here and there. I'm grateful to have so many close friends who are police officers. So again, I understand the perspective of what their job responsibilities are and how difficult they are. That's great. That's part of the responsibilities and the job. But I also get the narrative that police officers don't work in the favor of black people or black Americans. And we're resulted in the loss of life. We're resulted in mass incarceration. We're resulting in not being able to pay for the same things that, say, someone else can to get them out of the situation.
Yeah. Should we now? I think we should move on to our second story.
Do we have any comments about that? Did anyone want to don't share the comments about their feelings about that? All right. Well, fine.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. No, it's okay because this is my therapy session. So nobody else wants to talk about it. I'm getting it.
We're here for you.
Marie, do you have any comments on that?
I was just thinking about how this thing that we hope for cops, this thing where we hope that they will have some amount of self-doubt, some amount of reflection, some amount of releasing narcissism and thinking about how they're engaging in the world is the same thing we're asking from white people in general, like the white people who don't get it. Not that you can totally fully get it, but to get it at least, we're just asking people to consider you might be wrong. Consider you might be part of a narrative that is not true, that you might be complicit in something that's harmful. And that's hard to convince people to do, to doubt themselves, because it's very comforting to say, I know that this is true. I know that this is the worldview. I know that I'm a hero. I know that I'm doing good. And I think one of the commenters said a God complex, but you know, yeah. And maybe that's just a cultural issue where so many people are so unwilling to doubt themselves, so unwilling to be questioned and to reconsider how they view the world, especially white people who aren't told that they are socialized to view the world in any particular way at all. They just think that how they view the world is the default and normal.
Well, and you know, Marie, that's a great point. What that highlights, I think, what some people fail to realize is that's the basis of white supremacy, right? That's when the narrative becomes that white Americans as the majority, their voice is the voice to go to, their way of life is the way of life to go to. That's what harnesses that continuous progression and holding on to the systemic white supremacy. That's literally what that is. And I think people refuse to acknowledge that so that they can remain comfortable in that privilege. They can remain comfortable in, I don't want to disrupt the way that my life is by speaking up and out against these things that we need to speak up and speak out against. If in the event they were able to step away from that and see how it affects other communities, marginalized communities, then, you know, again, that perspective potentially could change. But the willful ignorance of people to just hold on to that narrative and refuse to observe a different perspective. I had two words for him, but I won't say it tonight. However, you definitely need to.
Your camera's not on and you have two middle fingers. So there you go.
There you go. Thank you. Thanks. That's why Ethan is my partner there. That's exactly why I appreciate it. Thank you. All right. So shall we get into our next topic, our next story here?
Yes. Aunt Jemima.
Oh.
We'll start with the video.
Okay.
Give me I keep doing that. I gotta get better at this.
You can do it.
I can do it. I know I can. All right, here we go.
Let me fix you some breakfast. Aunt Jemima. Did you know the name Aunt Jemima means slave mammy of the plantation South? Did you know the founder, Chris Rutt, a white man, got the name after attending a minstrel show? Think blackface. Did you also know he hired former slave Nancy Green to be his very own Aunt Jemima, where she went around cooking pancakes and telling people stories of the good old South? And afterwards, they could take home a box of Aunt Jemima and that feeling of having their very own mammy. Not today. Black lives matter, people. Even over breakfast.
That really is a powerful message. Black
lives matter. I love her.
Even over breakfast.
I love her. She laid that out for me and the rest of the world. And I love her for it. So that's a few things to talk about here.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ethan.
If you don't mind, let's address mammy, what a mammy is.
I love how you said that too. I need you to have more Southern dialect and draw when you say mammy, as you correct me with Della Fon.
Am I saying it too white?
It's not as Southern as it needs to be, but that's fine. That's fine. Let's talk about mammy. Go ahead and let's show that description right here.
So mammy, is a U.S. stereotype, especially in the South, for a Black woman who worked in a white family and nursed the family's children. The mammy figure is rooted in the history of slavery in the United States. Black female slaves were tasked with domestic and childcare work in white American households.
You know,
I mean, that's a pretty simple explanation of why it needs to change. I don't see why people have an issue with it.
So here's one of the things that really just, as the kids say, sent me this week. The fact that you want to disregard that this is something that has derived from slavery. You know, there's so many people, and Ethan, as you pointed out before the show, a lot of white Americans are getting all upset about how they want to change the name of Aunt Jemima. And some of us may say Aunt Jemima, whatever, depends on where you're from. Aunt. It's a thing, Ethan, don't worry about it. It's a Black thing. Some of us say Auntie. did you see his look? He was like, what, Aunt or Aunt, used interchangeably here. The bottom line is, it's something that has derived from slavery. And there are many people that I've seen, at least within the white American community, who are in an uproar about the fact that, why would you change the name that has been this household name for so long? Who cares that it's been a household name? It's derived from slavery. I'm going to get into that a little later on. So that's Manny. What else do we have is for us to review too as well with this?
So it was also the character, Aunt Jemima, was based off blackface. So the inspiration of Aunt Jemima, American style. I'm not even going to attempt that word. It was
minstrelsy, vaudeville song.
Minstrelly, I think it is.
Minstrelly.
Yeah. Old minstrelly Aunt song.
Oh, Rick, you're a better. Do you mind? You're much better.
So it's an American style minstrelly song, Old Aunt Jemima, written in 1875. Rutt reportedly saw a minstrel show featured the old Aunt Jemima song in the fall of 1889, presented by blackface. I love the highlight there, because we need to talk about, for some of you who don't know what blackface is, dear Lord, where have you been? Presented by blackface performers identified by Arthur F. Marquette as Baker and Farrell. I believe it's Farrell or Farrell, but I think it's Farrell. Marquette recounts that the actor playing Aunt Jemima wore an apron and kerchief, which is like a handkerchief around her head, and Rutt appropriated this Aunt Jemima character to market the Pearl Milling Company pancake mix in the late 1889. Okay, so now we have that this is derivative of slavery, the Mammy character. Now, then we have how this has spawned from a minstrel show in the late 1800s. Minstrel show, which was white people putting on a show in blackface. For those of you who don't know what blackface is, you probably have seen it. In fact, we talked a little bit about it on our show last week. I believe it was last week, where the teenage girls that put black paint on their face and some other things that we won't go back into. But it was literally putting on blackface, red lips, and mocking black people, specifically slaves, in the 1800s. That's what blackface is. And it's reprehensible and highly offensive to be done also still in today. In fact, it just took place again. Was there another one that we had to review as well? Because so many people are in an uproar about this whole actual thing taking place and them removing the symbol or their marketing piece, whatever the brand, excuse me, on August 5th, 2014.
People don't seem to understand. They think this is just because of everything happening with the Black Lives Matter movement right now. And this is just for context. You understand this is not a new thing. It's been going on since before 2014.
Thank you for highlighting that. It was actually something that I had a conversation that I gotten into with an individual on social media who did not understand because he had not seen any outspokenness around this prior to this Black Lives protest and Black Lives Matter movement. He felt that it was all done because of this movement. And in fact, this had been something that people had been targeting for a while. And the lawsuit says on August 5th, 2014, descendants of Anna Short Harrington filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois against plaintiffs Quaker Oats and PepsiCo for $2 billion. The suit, which was also named as defendants Pinnacle Foods and its former suitor Hillshire Brand, accused the companies of failing to pay Harrington and her heirs an equitable fair share of royalties from the pancake mix and syrup brand that uses her likeness and recipes. The lawsuit was dismissed and with prejudice and without leave to amend on February 18th of 2015. That's a lot that we need to cover there as well. I wish I had my good friend, attorney Natasha Robinson, to kind of break that down. I might have her go through that in her show. So a couple of things here. Let's start with Mammy. It comes from a term used during slavery or right after. One of the things I think that is most important to highlight when we talk about slavery and the trauma of slavery, because there's so much trauma in slavery that has been passed down from generation to generation that people want to excuse, specifically white Americans want to excuse the actual trauma that has been passed down throughout the generations. I believe it's considered intergenerational trauma, right? The term mammy is a reflection of something that took place within slavery. Here's one of the things I had to say in regards to the whole conversation of slavery. It's very hand in hand with the individuals who want to hold on to Confederate flags, Confederate statues, and so on and so forth. This was a system that kept slavery alive. The Confederacy was about slavery. This whole brand was centered around slavery, right? So if in the event We want to hold on to those, and excuse my youngest dog in the background. He wants to be on camera too. If we hold on to those brands, that becomes a trigger. And what people don't seem to understand is when there's a trigger that's because of trauma, there's a whole race of people who are triggered by it. And the post came because the gentleman thought that this was this movement for Aunt Jemima, and I think even Uncle Ben's took place as a result of not realizing that there has been a consistent push to remove such brand labels and names. Just because you don't see it happening doesn't mean that it hasn't existed in the past. Just because no one has spoken out about it in the past doesn't mean, or hasn't spoken out about it in the past, doesn't mean that it wasn't taking place. People have been pushing to get rid of that trauma trigger for a long time. it's not just relatively new. I don't know. So Ethan brought up a great point. There seems to be a lot more white Americans that are mad about the removal.
They're freaking out. Like, I don't get it. I really don't get it. Like, they think it's a personal attack on them. It's like, dude, relax. Like, how is this really? How is Aunt Jemima changing the name impacting you in any way? Like, can you really lie? Why be upset? Like, if it makes the lives of another group of people easier, change it. I don't care. I'm not going to cry about it.
And in that conversation, it was definitely someone who mentioned, well, I think it's a marketing ploy and they're, you know, riding the wave of marketing and this and that. Here's the, at the end of the day, let me just be clear. It's a capitalist society that we live in. I wouldn't expect anything less. They're going to use a marketing ploy when they can. If that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. If it takes that marketing ploy to get rid of something that triggers a whole race of people, then get it off the shelves. Change it. Do what you have to do if that's what it takes. I don't care that it's a marketing ploy. It's triggering.
I don't want to – I'm not comfortable reading this comment, but I think it's from Amari. It should be put on screen.
We don't want to keep seeing ourselves as mammies and house niggers. Rebrand and help us heal, damn it. You know, I don't know how many times we can use that word, but in the story or scenario that I have later, it's definitely going to be used. And I want to make sure that we understand that. And thank you, Ethan, for deferring to me for that. I appreciate that.
I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Omani's absolutely right. We don't want to see that anymore. We don't want to have the reminders of what slavery was. Trust me, many people have passed down memories and stories of what slavery looked like, of what Jim Crow looked like. And let me be clear. Let me say this on this show so that people understand. White America and even Black men, do not discount what Black women have done for this country. Black women probably sacrificed more for this country than this country ever will. Black women raised kids during slavery and in Jim Crow. Black women were there to do the work that needed to be done around the house. Black women have endured more pain and suffering than people want to acknowledge. So if we want to get rid of Mammy off of a syrup bottle, damn it, get rid of it, because she's triggering. And it's been benefiting, as we talk about white supremacy and systemic racism, it's been benefiting for the white community, for this white family. And they chose not to send any of that royalty to the Black family from where this came from. You want to look at systemic racism and how real it is? You want to look at that? There you have it. And when they went through the lawsuit was dismissed with prejudice. So the Black family still ends up with nothing. But yet you want Black communities to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and do better financially. How? Yo, how? Somebody tell me how you explain how we're supposed to do that when you have situations like this that continue to crush the Black community so that they cannot financially create generational wealth? How? That was a bit of a rant. My apologies. So,
no, you're fine, man. I'm learning.
So I have issue with the people like the gentleman who was on in the comment section, and I really hope that he's watching. I have issue with people who want to will away what slavery was. And we can go ahead because I know we're going to get to our limit here. But I want to make this declaration known. So for those of you, specifically white Americans, for those of you who are watching or in my case, listening, who want to, and I've seen this a lot this week. This is what's really got me so wrapped up, guys. What I've seen a lot this week is when we talk about the removal of Confederate statues, people are defending that and saying that it's part of American history. Sure. People are defending that, saying, why would you wipe out an entire part of our history and our heritage? Okay. When we look at the removal of Aunt Jemima and what she represented and what that face represents and the memory behind that face, people are defending her removal. Let's be clear about something. White people explain slavery as something that happened. It was a bad time in our country. and it was a horrible treatment of Black people. White Americans probably sit around their dinner table with their grandmother or their great-grandmother, and they pass down stories of, for those who had slaves and plantations, of how their slave, the slave owners, their ancestors, how they treated the slaves. It was bad, but they didn't treat the slaves that bad. They made sure that the slaves were taken care of, that the slaves had a place to stay, that the slaves weren't really treated like other slaves. Let's change the perspective for a bit, and let's look at a Black household with a grandmother or great-grandmother who tells a story. Let me tell you what she tells in that story. She tells a story of having to have been beaten relentlessly because the child is, the white child that she's supposed to be nursing is crying because she isn't working hard enough in the fields. She's being raped repeatedly because the slave owner's sons have to learn how to be a man and they can take it out on her body. Black men are being lynched by the master's little boys because they have to learn how to lynch a nigger. They have to learn that. That's a trait that they need to learn. These stories are the ones that's being passed down in the Black households. There is nothing good or nice about slavery, nothing. And if you continue to spawn that narrative that slavery was bad, but we treated our slaves okay, then you're doing an injustice to an entire race of people. Here's why you want to keep the Confederate flags. Here's why you want to keep Aunt Jemima on a bottle or on pancake mix or whatever else they're selling. At the end of the day, racism is derived from how Blacks were treated during the slavery era. It's passed down to Jim Crow, and it's passed down into today's systemic racism that we see. To keep Black communities in the Black community and to keep white communities flourishing and financially funded, here is where we can make a difference, because the entire country and other countries are speaking out about that injustice. And if it starts with taking off the Black face on a brand, then so be it. If it starts by removing statues because you're triggering an entire race that this country's wealth was built on the backs of, then so be it. Blacks had the wealth of this country built on their backs. The indigenous Americans were pillaged so that European Americans would have this country to be able to do with it what they wanted. And if you don't want to acknowledge and at least show that these two groups of people amongst the immigrants who are brown and are still continuing on the progress of this country, if you can't take the moment and time to change your perspective and see it from their eyes, then you're part of the fucking problem. Excuse me for saying. And here's where we have a chance to end it. So get out and celebrate Juneteenth as well.
If you don't mind, I'd like to actually address this comment from Lola. White Americans want us to just forget slavery and the injustices of the people of color. But when it comes to 9/11, the slogan is never forget. That was a one-day tragedy. Black people have been dealing with trauma for over 400 years.
Damn.
Lola couldn't have said it better myself. I'm a good sister there. She's absolutely right. When you look at it again, I think that unfortunately, guys, is when we look at white supremacy and what it is. White supremacy is to hold on and continue the mentality that white is superior, white is correct. The white perspective is the perspective of our country. No, it's not. Other races need to be in that perspective as well. You need to have different vantage points so that you understand the full scope of what took place. There are movies and shows that my mom and my aunt call, and my grandmother, rest in peace, used to call, Lordy Lordy movies. And what she meant by Lordy Lordy movies, what they meant by Lordy Lordy movies were movies that depicted the Jim Crow South or depicted slavery. And my grandmother and my mother would always say, which, by the way, let me put this out there, that story that I told was not from my grandmother, but there are grandmothers and great-grandmothers in households who are telling that story. My grandmother has passed down discussions and memories of her mother and grandmother in slave times. But when we talk about those movies and their perception of what slavery looked like and the real heartache of what came from slavery, although it might be somewhat whitewashed, they say, my mother and my grandmother would say, we don't need to watch those movies. We lived it. We were there. We saw how separate but equal wasn't really equal. We saw how slaves were treated or at least heard the stories passed down from generation to generation. So while white people are passing down stories of the wealth that they have in their families, whether they lost it or not and had to fight for a position at the table, they at least got a position at the table because they were at least seen as human. You look at Jim Crow, black people still weren't. And we're just now, like I mentioned in another show, we're only one generation, not even a full life generation in America out of Jim Crow. We're not. That's still a real system that's memorable from the people who lived it. So at the end of the day, you know, yeah, we'll never forget 9/11, a horrible tragedy. Which, did we prove that Bill had nothing to do with that? I mean, not Bill, Bush had nothing to do with it? That's another story for another time.
I'm not touching that.
Conspiracy theory came up there. But
Lola is on point today,
yes,
man.
Yes. Lola, will you do me a favor and friend me on Facebook? Because
she needs a microphone.
Yes.
And we got to get Lola on. Absolutely. Got to get Lola on. She's right. All buildings matter, right? I feel like I might start doing that on 9/11.
I wouldn't get disowned by every conservative friend I have. I am so tempted to post that.
Hey, Ethan, it's time to be anti-racist, bro. Post it. Post it. Tell them to deal with it.
Yeah, and they can come talk to me. Do it.
They can come talk to me about it.
I'm trying to stop starting fires on my personal Facebook.
Well, okay, then put it on the YFN News channel. I'll deal with it there.
Right. That's white privilege right there.
All right.
Well done, Marie. Look at that. But honestly, Ethan, that's what it is going to take, that man, right? It's going to take for people to get uncomfortable about what they see so that engages in conversation.
Oh, you're right.
You're right. All buildings matter? Great. Well, let's talk about all lives matter too, right? Yeah. No, we want to talk about the buildings that the Twin Towers that went down. Well, we're talking about the black community now.
Yeah.
That's in need of attention. And I'm done. That was my rant. I had to get that off my chest.
Rick, I think that was needed. And honestly, people were clearly listening because viewership didn't really drop throughout the entirety of what you were saying. So,
and that's without the face camera working. That's just
now we saw your beautiful face.
Oh, listen, StreamYard knew that. Yeah. Let's just listen to his voice. We didn't need the face to go along with it. So listen, before we wrap up, should we have any last thoughts around our stories today? Anything else that we need to share before we
head I'd on like up? To turn it over to Marie because I get to talk a lot. So anything Marie has to say.
I had a question that came up for me before you made my video go live and you were talking about supporting Black businesses and going to Juneteenth and everything. And I'm just curious, like as a white person who would attend a Juneteenth thing and who wants to more intentionally find Black businesses to support. When I go to like Juneteenth and if I wanted to buy some art that was made by someone who's Black, where is the line between me bringing that home and putting that up in my house without it being appropriation?
I don't know if I understand why you would think it would be appropriation. Help me understand.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you. I'm just thinking of like a lot of like 70-year-old white couples who travel the world and buy indigenous art and put it up in their homes. And I've just kind of heard the message that it's appropriation of like cultural art. Maybe I got the messaging off, but do you know what I mean? Does that help?
Yeah. Yep. That helps. You know, here's what I would say. This is just my own personal opinion. As I normally say, I don't speak for the entire Black race. For myself, what I would say is, I can understand why that would be viewed as appropriation. Sometimes you make this purchase, right? And you've contributed to this Black business and it's a piece of art because you wanted this art. It's the same thing with anything that you would purchase from a white artist or what have you, right? It's at the end of the day, it's a purchase that you made of something that you wanted to put in your household or, you know, that you wanted as clothing or what have you. So I wouldn't take it as appropriation if that was something that you wanted and you contributed to the Black community in addition to wanting that piece of art, right? Hmm. If you felt strongly that it was appropriation for you, then I would say maybe donate it to someone who doesn't have, who appreciates art, right? That could potentially be a way to kind of curb that, but I don't think that it's appropriation at all. I think it's supporting and it's actually making a purchase of something that you wanted, right? So, and again, some people might differ in that, but I personally don't think that by you going out supporting Black business, purchasing a piece of art that you wanted that happened to be a Black artist, and you taking it home and hanging it on your wall, and it might start a conversation in your household of other white Americans who need an understanding of what supporting Black businesses looks like.
Right? Yeah, so, I think what you're saying, I think maybe more context I should have provided is like I was envisioning beautiful art, like maybe a painting of a Black body on a canvas. Like if I bought that and hung pictures of Black bodies in my home, not just like I bought a jar of, you know, pickled garlic from a Black business owner, but like very like specifically, garlic, I'm props to you for that. I guess I don't know if that changes your response at all, but I realized that maybe I should have been more specific about what I was envisioning.
No, I mean, if you're going out and just like buying Black bodies and Black art and, you know, this and that, and you're decorating your house with it, that might be a conversation of appropriation. But if it's okay, a piece here or there, and it, you know, you're doing it because it's something that you wanted, but also because you want to donate and dedicate financial your finances to the Black community, then I personally don't see it as appropriation. It becomes appropriation when you continue to exacerbate the art and the pieces and you start like identifying that you're part of the culture and you want to be a part of the culture. And this is, you know, like Rachel Dolezal. Y'all remember Rachel Dolezal, don't you? Ask Rachel. Does anybody remember? Do you not remember Rachel Dolezal? Oh, I need you, both of you, to do better. Rachel. If you remember Rachel, there was a whole big movement around Rachel, who was the head of the NAACP, who had this complexion that was slightly tinted, slightly melanated, and curly wavy hair. And she said she was Black. She was identifying as Black, but her white parents got on and said, oh no, she's 100% white. And she had
that lady.
Yeah, that lady, her, right? That's appropriation. That's what appropriation looks like to me.
I gotcha.
Purchasing items, I personally don't think that that's appropriation by any means.
And Amari put appreciation, not appropriation. I like that distinction. There it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are you monitoring Facebook and YouTube, Marie?
It's in the live comments on StreamYard.
Oh, I forgot you can see that too. Okay.
Girl.
Do I have to do that? Oh, yes, Marie. Word. Way to celebrate it in the show out on a very high pride note. Marie, tell us. Yes. You know, that's the community. That's the kids. Marie, please tell us, where can we find all of your information again and locate you?
Thank you for giving me that chance again. The three places you can find me is everyonesautonomous.com, mariedelafont.com, and then my... What? Sorry. Thank you for mansplaining my own last name, Ethan.
Trying to get a laugh out of
it. Don't start sweating. And then my last and then my humanist photography company is at marqueephoto.com. That's spelled M-A-R-K-E-I photo.com.
And for those of you who know it's go ahead.
And for the people who tuned in last or who have just started watching, if you are a Black business owner and you want some free commercial airtime on my little podcast of 500 listeners, let me know, everyonesautonomous@gmail.com.
Yeah, she is offering Black business free advertising on her podcast. Marie, that is awesome of you to do it. And listen, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation and the craziness that is in Black and White. Ethan, anything else before we
wrap? I added the links in the description for Marie's pages. Also, if you want to check out the video of Officer Karen, that is in the description as well. Same with the truth about Aunt Jemima. We do ask that you right now, if you could, go to go to facebook.com/YFNA News, like, and then also more importantly, go to youtube.com/YFNA News, like, and subscribe. And turn the notification bell on.
Almost forgot that one.
Yep. I did almost forget it. We have shows every Monday and Thursday. Mondays are the 13% with Richard Graves and Cynthia McDonald. It's a very enjoyable show. Hopefully you keep tuning in every Sunday and every Monday. This sorry, every Monday and every Thursday.
Right, I was going to say, who's on Sunday?
It's Sunday, though, Rick, don't forget.
I haven't forgotten. I haven't forgotten.
This dude yesterday, we had don't a show.
This. Don't oh, do
I'm
this.
Doing it. I'm doing it.
Oh.
I'm like messaging him. I'm like, hey, you're going to join? And he's like, join what? I'm like, it's what?
In my defense, he told me about it 2 weeks ago and there was no reminder. You have like 500 shows going on.
Wait,
and you sent me that link and I was like, why is he sending me this link? What is this link for? Our show's not until Thursday.
I can get him to back off of you, Rick. You want me to help you?
Please.
No.
That is white privilege, Ethan.
Thank you. Call him out.
You want a white man to shut up.
call out that white privilege, Marie. Thank you. See, and Marie's part of the white woman.
We're gaslighting you, Ethan.
Part of the white women demographic. So she has, there's some force behind those words. But listen, please tell us about our show on Sunday, Ethan.
Sunday we will be, it'll be you, me, Cynthia McDonald, and Chris Shelton. And we'll be tackling some of the some systemic racism, some of the myths around defund the police. And hopefully we have people with with different views coming on. So I think it'll be a good show for you to watch.
Definitely. I'm looking forward to that show, actually. And as Ethan mentioned, make sure that you do tune in on Mondays for the 13% host Cynthia McDonald and Richard Graves host the discussions and conversation around the 13% Americans, which are Black Americans. For all of you all who are watching, thank you so much for joining us again. Tune in on Sunday. What time on Sunday, Ethan?
5 p.m. Oh, sorry.
White privilege.
He's mad at me for not remembering shit. All right, fine.
7 p.m. Central Daylight Time.
7 p.m. Central Daylight Time here on YFNA News. Make sure that you also tune in again next Thursday at 7:30, unless we switch it to 6:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time. We're here for you. We appreciate you. Make sure that you share this on your social media platform so that you can get people involved in the conversation and get uncomfortable in black and white. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Bye.